You were always cool under pressure, but this is the pros. Now all you see are giant guys coming toward you. 1,200 pounds of giant guys who want to take you apart. Giant guys who move faster than you ever thought possible. You feel cornered, helpless. The fixed mindset reaction. You torture yourself with the idea that a quarterback is a leader, and you're no leader. How could you ever inspire the confidence of your teammates when you can't get your act together to throw a good pass or scramble for a few yards? To make things worse, the sportscasters keep asking, "What happened to the boy wonder?" To minimize the humiliation, you begin to keep to yourself. And to avoid the sportscasters, you disappear into the locker room right after the game. Well, is this a recipe for success? What steps could you take to make things better? Think about the resources at your disposal and how you could use them. But first, get your mindset turned around. The growth mindset step. In the growth mindset, you tell yourself that the switch to the professionals is a huge step, one that takes a lot of adjustment and a lot of learning. There are many things you couldn't possibly know yet and that you'd better start finding out about. You try to spend more time with the veteran quarterbacks, asking them questions and watching tapes with them. Instead of hiding your insecurities, you talk about how different it is from college. They, in turn, tell you that's exactly how they felt. In fact, they share their humiliating stories with you. You ask them what they did to overcome the initial difficulties, and they teach you their mental and physical techniques. As you begin to feel more integrated into the team, you realize you're part of an organization that wants to help you grow, not judge and belittle you. Rather than worrying that they overpaid for your talent, you begin to give them their money's worth of incredibly hard work and team spirit. People who don't want to change. Entitlement. The world owes you. Many people with the fixed mindset think the world needs to change, not them. They feel entitled to something better, a better job, house, or spouse. The world should recognize their special qualities and treat them accordingly. Let's move to the next dilemma and imagine yourself in this situation. The next dilemma. Here I am, you think, in this low-level job. It's demeaning. With my talent, I shouldn't have to work like this. I should be up there with the big boys, enjoying the good life. Your boss thinks you have a bad attitude. When she needs someone to take on more responsibilities, she doesn't turn to you. When it's time to give out promotions, she doesn't include you. The fixed mindset reaction. She's threatened by me, you say bitterly. Your fixed mindset is telling you that, because of who you are, you should automatically be thrust into the upper levels of the business. In your mind, people should see your talents and reward you. When they don't, it's not fair. Why should you change? You just want your due. But putting yourself in a growth mindset, what are some new ways you could think and some steps you could take? For example, what are some new ways you could think about effort, about learning, and how you could act on this new thinking in your work? Well, you could consider working harder and being more helpful to people at work. You could use your time to learn more about the business you're in instead of bellyaching about your low status. Let's see how this might look. The growth mindset step. First, let's be clear. For a long time, it's frightening to think of giving up the idea of being superior. An ordinary, run-of-the-mill human being isn't what you want to be. How could you feel good about yourself if you're no more valuable than the people you look down on? You begin to consider the idea that some people stand out because of their commitment and effort. Little by little, you try putting more effort into things and seeing if you get more of the rewards you wanted. You do. Although you can slowly accept the idea that effort might be necessary, you still can't accept that it's no guarantee. It's enough of an indignity to have to work at things. But to work and still not have them turn out the way you want, now that's really not fair. That means you could work hard and somebody else could get the promotion. Outrageous. It's a long time before you begin to enjoy putting in effort and a long time before you begin to think in terms of learning. Instead of seeing your time at the bottom of the corporate ladder as an insult, you slowly see that you can learn a lot at the bottom that could help you greatly on your rise to the top. Learning the nuts and bolts of the company could later give you a big advantage. All of our top growth mindset CEOs know their companies from top to bottom, inside out, and upside down. Instead of seeing your discussions with your colleagues as time spent getting what you want, you begin to grasp the idea of building relationships or even helping your colleagues develop in ways they value. This can become a new source of satisfaction. You might say you were following in the footsteps of Bill Murray and his Groundhog Day experience. As you become a more growth-minded person, you're amazed at how people start to help you, support you. They no longer seem like adversaries out to deny what you deserve. They're more and more often collaborators toward a common goal. It's interesting. You started out wanting to change other people's behavior, and you did. In the end, many people with the fixed mindset understand that their cloak of specialness was really a suit of armor they built to feel safe, strong, and worthy. While it may have protected them early on, later it constricted their growth, sent them into self-defeating battles, and cut them off from satisfying mutual relationships. Denial. My life is perfect. People in a fixed mindset often run away from their problems. If their life is flawed, then they're flawed. It's easier to make believe everything's all right. Try this dilemma. The dilemma. You seem to have everything. You have a fulfilling career, a loving marriage, wonderful children, and devoted friends. But one of those things isn't true. Unbeknownst to you, your marriage is ending. It's not that there haven't been signs, but you chose to misinterpret them. You were fulfilling your idea of the man's role or the woman's role, and couldn't hear your partner's desire for more communication and more sharing of your lives. By the time you wake up and take notice, it's too late. Your spouse is disengaged emotionally from the relationship. The fixed mindset reaction. You've always felt sorry for divorced people, abandoned people, and now you're one of them. You lose all sense of worth. Your partner, who knew you intimately, doesn't want you anymore. For months, you don't feel like going on, convinced that even your children would be better off without you. It takes a while to get to the point where you feel at all useful or competent or hopeful. Now comes the hard part, because even though you now feel a little better about yourself, you're still in the fixed mindset. You're embarking on a lifetime of judging. With every good thing that happens, your internal voice says, maybe I'm okay after all. But with every bad thing that happens, the voice says, my spouse was right. Every new person you meet is judged, too, as a potential betrayer. How could you rethink your marriage, yourself, and your life from a growth mindset perspective? Why were you afraid to listen to your spouse? What could you have done? What should you do now? The growth mindset step. First, it's not that the marriage, which you used to think of as inherently good, suddenly turned out to have been all bad or always bad. It was an evolving thing that had stopped developing for lack of nourishment. You need to think about how both you and your spouse contributed to this, and especially about why you weren't able to hear the request for greater closeness and sharing. As you probe, you realize that in your fixed mindset, you saw your partner's request as a criticism of you that you didn't want to hear. You also realize that at some level, you were afraid you weren't capable of the intimacy your partner was requesting. So instead of exploring these issues with your spouse, you turned a deaf ear, hoping they would go away. When a relationship goes sour, these are the issues we all need to explore in depth, not to judge ourselves for what went wrong, but to overcome our fears and learn the communication skills we'll need to build and maintain better relationships in the future. Ultimately, a growth mindset allows people to carry forth not judgments and bitterness, but new understanding and new skills. Is someone in your life trying to tell you something you're refusing to hear? Step into the growth mindset and listen again. Changing your child's mindset. Many of our children, our most precious resource, are stuck in a fixed mindset. You can give them a personal brainology workshop. Let's look at some ways to do this. The precocious fixed mindsetter. Most kids who adopt a fixed mindset don't become truly passionate deliverers until later in childhood. But some kids take to it much earlier. The dilemma. Imagine your young son comes home from school one day and says to you, "Some kids are smart and some kids are dumb. They have a worse brain." You're appalled. "Who told you that?" you ask him, gearing up to complain to the school. "I figured it out myself," he says proudly. He saw that some children could read and write their letters and add a lot of numbers and others couldn't. He drew his conclusion, and he held fast to it. Your son is precocious in all aspects of the fixed mindset, and soon the mindset is in full flower. He develops a distaste for effort. He wants his smart brain to churn things out quickly for him, and it often does. When he takes to chess very quickly, your spouse, thinking to inspire him, rents the movie Searching for Bobby Fischer, a film about a young chess champion. What your son learns from the film is that you could lose and not be a champion anymore. So he retires. "I'm a chess champion," he announces to one and all. "A champion who won't play." Because he now understands what losing means, he takes further steps to avoid it. He starts cheating at Candyland, chutes and ladders, and other games. He talks often about all the things he can do and other children can't. When you and your spouse tell him that other children aren't dumb, they just haven't practiced as much as he has, he refuses to believe it. He watches things carefully at school and then comes home and reports, "Even when the teacher shows us something new, I can do it better than them. I don't have to practice." This boy is invested in his brain, not in making it grow, but in singing its praises. You've already told him that it's about practice and learning, not smart and dumb, but he doesn't buy it. What else can you do? What are the other ways you can get the message across? The growth mindset step. You decide that rather than trying to talk him out of the fixed mindset, you have to live the growth mindset. At the dinner table each evening, you and your partner structure the discussion around the growth mindset, asking each child and each other, "What did you learn today? What mistake did you make that taught you something? What did you try harder at today?" You go around the table with each question, excitedly discussing your own and one another's efforts, strategies, setbacks, and learning. You talk about skills you have today that you didn't have yesterday because of the practice you put in. You dramatize mistakes you made that held the key to the solution, telling it like a mystery story. You describe with relish things you're struggling with and making progress on. Soon the children can't wait each night to tell their stories. "Oh my goodness," you say with wonder, "you certainly did get smarter today." When your fixed mindset son tells stories about doing things better than other children, everyone says, "Yeah, but what did you learn?" When he talks about how easy everything is for him in school, you all say, "Oh, that's too bad. You're not learning. Can you find something harder to do so you could learn more?" When he boasts about being a champ, you say, "Champs are the people who work the hardest. You can become a champ. Tomorrow, tell me something you've done to become a champ." Poor kid, it's a conspiracy. In the long run, he doesn't stand a chance. When he does his homework and calls it easy or boring, you teach him to find ways to make it more fun and challenging. If he has to write words like boy, you ask him, "How many words can you think of that rhyme with boy? Write them on separate paper, and later we can make a sentence that has all the words." When he finishes his homework, you play the game. The boy threw the toy into the soy sauce. The girl with the curl ate a pearl. Eventually, he starts coming up with his own ways to make his homework more challenging. And it's not just school or sports. You encourage the children to talk about ways they learn to make friends, or ways they're learning to understand and help others. You want to communicate that feats of intellect or physical prowess are not all you care about. For a long time, your son remains attracted to the fixed mindset. He loves the idea that he's inherently special, case closed. He doesn't love the idea that he has to work every day for some little gain in skill or knowledge. Stardom shouldn't be so taxing. Yet as the value system in the family shifts toward the growth mindset, he wants to be a player. So at first he talks the talk, squawking. Then he walks the walk, balking. Finally, going all the way, he becomes the mindset watchdog. When anyone in the family slips into fixed mindset thinking, he delights in catching them. "Be careful what you wish for," you joke to your spouse. The fixed mindset is so very tempting. It seems to promise children a lifetime of worth, success, and admiration just for sitting there and being who they are. That's why it can take a lot of work to make the growth mindset flourish where the fixed mindset has taken root. Effort gone awry. Sometimes the problem with a child isn't too little effort, it's too much. And for the wrong cause. We've all heard about school children who stay up past midnight every night studying, or children who are sent to tutors so they can outstrip their classmates. These children are working hard, but they're typically not in a growth mindset. They're not focused on love of learning. They're usually trying to prove themselves to their parents. And in some cases, the parents may like what comes out of this high effort, the grades, the awards, the admission to top schools. Let's see how you would handle this one. The dilemma. You're proud of your daughter. She's at the top of her class and bringing home straight A's. She's a flute player studying with the best teacher in the country. And you're confident she'll get into the top private high school in the city. But every morning before school, she gets an upset stomach, and some days she throws up. You keep feeding her a blander and blander diet to soothe her sensitive stomach, but it doesn't help. It never occurs to you that she's a nervous wreck. When your daughter is diagnosed with an ulcer, it should be a wake-up call, but you and your spouse remain asleep. You continue to see it as a gastrointestinal issue. The doctor, however, insists that you consult a family counselor. He tells you it's a mandatory part of your daughter's treatment and hands you a card with the counselor's name and number. The fixed mindset reactions. The counselor tells you to ease up on your daughter. Let her know it's okay not to work so hard. Make sure she gets more sleep. So you dutifully follow the instructions. Make sure she gets to sleep by 10 o'clock each night. But this only makes things worse. She now has less time to accomplish all the things that are expected of her. Despite what the counselor has said, it doesn't occur to you that she could possibly want your daughter to fall behind other students, or be less accomplished at the flute, or risk not getting into the top high school. How could that be good for her? The counselor realizes she has a big job. Her first goal is to get you more fully in touch with the seriousness of the problem. The second goal is to get you to understand your role in the problem. You and your spouse need to see that it's your need for perfection that has led to the problem. Your daughter wouldn't have run herself ragged if she hadn't been afraid of losing your approval. The third goal is to work out a concrete plan that you can all follow. Can you think of some concrete things that can be done to help your daughter enter a growth mindset so she can ease up and get some pleasure from her life? The growth mindset step. The plan the counselor suggests would allow your daughter to start enjoying the things she does. The flute lessons are put on hold. Your daughter is told she can practice as much or as little as she wants for the pure joy of the music and nothing else. She is to study her school materials to learn from them, not to cram everything possible into her head. The counselor refers her to a tutor who teaches her how to study for understanding. The tutor also discusses the material with her in a way that makes it interesting and enjoyable. Studying now has a new meaning. It isn't about getting the highest grade to prove her intelligence and worth to her parents. It's about learning things and thinking about them in interesting ways. Your daughter's teachers are brought into the loop to support her in her reorientation toward growth. They're asked to talk to her about and praise her for her learning process rather than how she did on tests. I can see that you really understand how to use metaphors in your writing. I can see that you were really into your project on the Incas. When I read it, I felt as though I were in ancient Peru. You are taught to talk to her this way, too. Finally, the counselor strongly urges that your daughter attend a high school that is less pressured than the one you have your eye on. There are other fine schools that focus more on learning and less on grades and test scores. You take your daughter around and spend time in each of the schools. Then she discusses with you and the counselor which one she was most excited about and felt most at ease in. Slowly, you learn to separate your needs and desires from hers. You may have needed a daughter who was number one in everything, but your daughter needed something else, acceptance from her parents and freedom to grow. As you let go, your daughter becomes much more genuinely involved in the things she does. She does them for interest and learning, and she does them very well indeed. Is your child trying to tell you something you don't want to hear? You know the ad that asks, "Do you know where your child is now?" If you can't hear what your child is trying to tell you, in words or actions, then you don't know where your child is. Enter the growth mindset and listen harder. Mindset and willpower. Sometimes we don't want to change ourselves very much. We just want to be able to drop some pounds and keep them off, or stop smoking, or control our anger. Some people think about this in a fixed mindset way. If you're strong and have willpower, you can do it. But if you're weak and don't have willpower, you can't. People who think this way may firmly resolve to do something, but they'll take no special measures to make sure they succeed. These are the people who end up saying, "Quitting is easy. I've done it 100 times. It's just like the chemistry students we talked about before. The ones with the fixed mindset thought, "If I have ability, I'll do well. If I don't, I won't." As a result, they didn't use sophisticated strategies to help themselves. They just studied in an earnest but superficial way and hoped for the best. When people with a fixed mindset fail their test, in chemistry, dieting, smoking, or anger, they beat themselves up. They're incompetent, weak, or bad people. Where do you go from there? My friend Nathan's 25th high school reunion was coming up, and when he thought about how his ex-girlfriend would be there, he decided to lose the paunch. He'd been handsome and fit in high school, and he didn't want to show up as a fat, middle-aged man. Nathan had always made fun of women and their diets. What's the big fuss? You just need some self-control. To lose weight, he decided he would just eat part of what was on his plate. But each time he got into the meal, the food on the plate disappeared. "I blew it," he'd say, feeling like a failure and ordering dessert, either to seal the failure or to lift his mood. I'd say, "Nathan, this isn't working. You need a better system. Why not put some of the meal aside at the beginning or have the restaurant wrap it up to take home? Why not fill your plate with extra vegetables so it'll look like more food? There are lots of things you can do." To this, he would say, "No, I have to be strong." Nathan ended up going on one of those liquid crash diets, losing weight for the reunion and putting back more than he lost afterward. I wasn't sure how this was being strong and how using some simple strategies was being weak. Next time you try a diet, think of Nathan and remember that willpower is not just a thing you have or don't have. Willpower needs help. I'll come back to this point. Anger. Controlling anger is something else that's a problem for many people. Something triggers their temper and off they go, losing control of their mouths or worse. Here too, people may vow that next time they'll be different. Anger control is a big issue between partners and between parents and children. Not only because partners and children do things that make us angry, but also because we may think we have a greater right to let loose when they do. Try this one. The dilemma. Imagine you're a nice, caring person, as you probably are, usually. You love your spouse and feel lucky to have them as your partner. But when they violate one of your rules, like letting the garbage overflow before taking it out, you feel personally betrayed and start criticizing. It begins with, "I've told you 1,000 times," then moves on to, "You never do anything right." When they still don't seem properly ashamed, you flare, insulting their intelligence. "Maybe you aren't smart enough to remember garbage." And their character. "If you weren't so irresponsible, you wouldn't... If you cared about anyone but yourself, you'd..." Seething with rage, you then bring in everything you can think of to support your case. "My father never trusted you either." Or, "Your boss was right when he said you were limited." Your spouse has to leave the premises to get out of the range of your mounting fury. The fixed mindset reaction. You feel righteous about your anger for a while, but then you realize you've gone too far. You suddenly recall all the ways that your spouse is a supportive partner and feel intensely guilty. Then you talk yourself back into the idea that you too are a good person who's just slipped up, lost it, temporarily. "I've really learned my lesson," you think. "I'll never do this again." But believing you can simply keep that good person in the forefront in the future, you don't think of strategies you could use next time to prevent a flare-up. That's why the next time is a carbon copy of the time before. The growth mindset and self-control. Some people think about losing weight or controlling their anger in a growth mindset way. They realize that to succeed, they'll need to learn and practice strategies that work for them. It's like the growth mindset chemistry students. They used better study techniques, carefully planned their study time, and kept up their motivation. In other words, they used every strategy possible to make sure they succeeded. Just like them, people in a growth mindset don't merely make New Year's resolutions and wait to see if they stick to them. They understand that to diet, they need a plan. They may need to keep desserts out of the house, or think in advance about what to order in restaurants, or schedule a once-a-week splurge, or consider exercising more. They think actively about maintenance. What habits must they develop to continue the gains they've achieved? Then there are the setbacks. They know that setbacks will happen. So instead of beating themselves up, they ask, "What can I learn from this? What will I do next time when I'm in this situation?" It's a learning process, not a battle between the bad you and the good you. In the last episode, what could you have done with your anger? First, think about why you got so worked up. You may have felt devalued and disrespected when your spouse shirked the tasks or broke your rules, as though they were saying to you, "You're not important. Your needs are trivial. I can't be bothered." Your first reaction was to angrily remind them of their duty. But on the heels of that was your retaliation, sort of, "Okay, big shot, if you think you're so important, try this one on for size." Your spouse, rather than reassuring you of your importance, simply braced for the onslaught. Meanwhile, you took the silence as evidence that they felt superior, and it fueled your escalation. What can be done? Several things. First, spouses can't read your mind. So, when an anger-provoking situation arises, you have to matter-of-factly tell them how it makes you feel. "I'm not sure why, but when you do that, it makes me feel unimportant. Like you can't be bothered to do things that mattered to me." They, in turn, can reassure you that they care about how you feel and will try to be more watchful. "Are you kidding?" You say, "My spouse would never do that." Well, you can request it directly, as I've sometimes done. "Please tell me that you care how I feel and you'll try to be more watchful." When you feel yourself losing it, you can learn to leave the room and write down your ugliest thoughts, followed by what is probably really happening. "She doesn't understand this is important to me. He doesn't know what to do when I start to blow." When you feel calm enough, you can return to the situation. You can also learn to loosen up on some of your rules now that each one is not a test of your partner's respect for you. With time, you might even gain a sense of humor about them. For example, if your spouse leaves some socks in the living room or puts the wrong things in the recycling bins, you might point at the offending items and ask sternly, "What is the meaning of this?" You might even have a good laugh. When people drop the good, bad, strong, weak thinking that grows out of the fixed mindset, they're better able to learn useful strategies that help with self-control. Every lapse doesn't spell doom. It's like anything else in the growth mindset. It's a reminder that you're an unfinished human being and a clue to how to do it better next time. Maintaining change. Whether people change their mindset in order to further their career, heal from a loss, help their children thrive, lose weight, or control their anger, change needs to be maintained. It's amazing. Once a problem improves, people often stop doing what caused it to improve. Once you feel better, you stop taking your medicine. But change doesn't work that way. When you've lost weight, the issue doesn't go away. Or when your child starts to love learning, the problem isn't solved forever. Or when you and your partner start communicating better, that's not the end of it. These changes have to be supported or they can go away faster than they appeared. Maybe that's why Alcoholics Anonymous tells people they will always be alcoholics, so they won't become complacent and stop doing what they need to do to stay sober. It's a way of saying, you'll always be vulnerable. This is why mindset change is not about picking up a few tricks. In fact, if someone stays inside a fixed mindset and uses the growth strategies, it can backfire. Wes, a dad with a fixed mindset, was at his wit's end. He'd come home exhausted from work every evening, and his son, Mickey, would refuse to cooperate. Wes wanted quiet, but Mickey was noisy. Wes would warn him, but Mickey would continue what he was doing. Wes found him stubborn, unruly, and not respectful of Wes's rights as a father. The whole scene would disintegrate into a shouting match, and Mickey would end up being punished. Finally feeling he had nothing to lose, Wes tried some of the growth-oriented strategies. He showed respect for Mickey's efforts and praised his strategies when he was emphatic or helpful. The turnaround in Mickey's behavior was dramatic. But as soon as the turnaround took place, Wes stopped using the strategies. He had what he wanted, and he expected it to just continue. When it didn't, he became even angrier and more punitive than before. Mickey had shown he could behave and now refused to. The same thing often happens with fixed-mindset couples who start communicating better. Marlene and Scott were what my husband and I call the Bickersons. All they did was bicker. Why don't you ever pick up after yourself? I might if you weren't such a nag. I wouldn't have to nag if you did what you were supposed to do. Who made you the judge of what I'm supposed to do? With counseling, Marlene and Scott stopped jumping on the negatives. More and more, they started rewarding the thoughtful things their partner did and the efforts their partner made. The love and tenderness they thought were dead returned. But once it returned, they reverted. In the fixed mindset, things shouldn't need such effort. Good people should just act good, and good relationships should just unfold in a good way. When the bickering resumed, it was fiercer than ever because it reflected all their disappointed hopes. Mindset change is not about picking up a few pointers here and there. It's about seeing things in a new way. When people, couples, coaches and athletes, managers and workers, parents and children, teachers and students, change to a growth mindset, they change from a judge and be judged framework to a learn and help learn framework. Their commitment is to growth, and growth takes plenty of time, effort, and mutual respect. Learn and help learn. Every day presents you with ways to grow and to help the people you care about grow. How can you remember to look for these chances? Each morning, as you contemplate the day in front of you, try to ask yourself these questions. Copy them over and paste them on your mirror. What are the opportunities for learning and growth today? For myself, for the people around me. As you think of opportunities, form a plan and ask, when, where, and how will I embark on my plan? When, where, and how make the plan concrete? How asks you to think of all the ways to bring your plan to life and make it work. As you encounter the inevitable obstacles and setbacks, form a new plan and ask yourself the question again, when, where, and how will I act on my new plan? Regardless of how bad you may feel, do it. Put that on your mirror, too. And when you succeed, don't forget to ask yourself, what do I have to do to maintain and continue the growth? Remember, as Alex Rodriguez, the great baseball player, says, you either go one way or the other. You might as well be the one deciding the direction. The road ahead. Change can be tough, but I've never heard anyone say it wasn't worth it. Maybe they're just rationalizing, the way people who've gone through a painful initiation say it was worth it. But people who've changed can tell you how their lives have been enhanced. They can tell you about things they have now that they wouldn't have had, and ways they feel now that they wouldn't have felt. Did changing to a growth mindset solve all my problems? No. But I know that I have a different life because of it, a richer one, and that I'm a more alive, courageous, and open person because of it. It's time for you to decide whether change is right for you now. Maybe it is, maybe it isn't. But either way, keep the growth mindset in your thoughts. Then, when you bump up against obstacles, you can turn to it. It will always be there for you, showing you a path into the future.
This has been a Gildan Audio production. For more affordable, life-changing audio programs, visit our website at gildanmedia.com.